Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Already close to October. We are already close to October here in Montana, which means November is right around the corner. So, I need to start coming up with a game plan. Okay, which topics should we hone in on? Which candidates should we get on the show? We don't want to be nothing but candidates and election issues from now till November because, the best part of the show is when we open things up, take your phone calls and more. But there's some key issues that folks are going to want to hear about before those ballots start showing up on your mailbox or when you're getting ready to head into the polls yourselves. We've got a few constitutional initiatives that will unfortunately be on your ballot this fall. Jeff Laslaffy with the Montana Family Foundation, great to have you in studio with us here on the program, as always. So good to see you.
Good to see you, Aaron. It's always good to be here.
Yeah. I did a story for our Montana Talks website earlier this week, a legal analysis of CI 128 in Montana. We're going to talk with former University of Montana constitutional law professor Rob Nadelson. I think on Monday's show is when we're going to have Rob on the program. But it's great to have you here today. So we'll get to more of the legal stuff on Monday. But from your perspective, what's the real reason this thing is on the ballot this November?
Well, there's two reasons that it's on the ballot. And it's not on the ballot just in Montana, of course. It's on the ballot in about a dozen states across the U.S. So the reason that it's in Montana is because we have the race for the U.S. Senate with Tester and Sheehy. The left feels that this is an issue that will drive their base. And in those states with tight races like that, they brought these in. And so the people need to understand that the money to fund this initiative is all out-of-state money. They're getting a little bit from Montana, but the vast majority is coming from out-of-state, and they've raised over $11 million now. And we heard through the grapevine that the plan is for them to raise $30 million just here in Montana. They're up near $60 million in Arizona now. They're just dumping money from these out-of-state billionaires, liberal billionaires like Governor Pritzker from Illinois, donated $1 million all by himself in Montana. And he's not doing that because he loves abortion in Montana. He's doing it because he wants to see John Tester retain that Senate seat.
Yeah, Victoria Evis actually had a good report for the Helena IR a few days ago, detailing the funding that's flowing in, not just for this radical abortion initiative, CI 128, but for these other radical initiatives that would change our elections. And like you pointed out, millions of dollars for every one of these constitutional initiatives. I think, what did she say, $8 million in her report for CI 128? But you're saying now the latest
number, over
$11 million.
Yeah.
A good reason. Just the simple fact that out-of-state money is what is supporting all these initiatives, it's a good reason for everybody to just say no to every single one of these, if you ask me. We got to take a quick break. We'll start diving into the details with Jeff Laslaffy right after this, right here on Montana Talks. Send us a message on the Montana Talks app. We'll also take your phone calls here in a few minutes as well.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Jeff Laslaffy with the Montana Family Foundation in the house with us here. So, Jeff, when I heard your latest legislative update on the radio and read portions of this this legal analysis by Rob Nadelson, that just further solidified for me that this radical abortion initiative, CI 128, it's about much more than even just abortion, what they're potentially trying to enshrine in our Montana Constitution here. I know you want to talk about that as well, but you said there's two reasons why the left wanted this on the ballot and is getting this on the ballot in Montana this November. One of them is because they're trying to drive out the abortion voter crowd for John Tester.
The liberal base.
Yeah, the liberal base. What was the second one?
The second one is because it creates a permanent funding stream for Planned Parenthood. It protects abortion in Montana and provides a permanent source of revenue, and that revenue, for people that don't know, eventually finds its way into political races. And Planned Parenthood's one of the largest donors to political races in the United States, and even here in Montana. So that's another good reason for them to want to see this in the Constitution.
I know you've done polling. You know where Montanans stand on the abortion topic. And even those Montanans that would call themselves pro-choice, even they believe that the line should be drawn somewhere. That's why this abortion initiative is so radical, because they're using deceptive language to make it sound like they're drawing a line that really isn't there. And this would basically allow abortion on demand all the way up to the due date. And all sorts of other crazy things, but they're using deceptive language to make the voter think that it's setting a limit where a limit actually most likely will not apply.
Exactly. So about 3/4 of the people in Montana believe that there should be limits on abortion, and most of those people believe that the majority, actually, according to our polls, believes that that should be somewhere around the time that the infant can feel pain during an abortion, if not earlier at the heartbeat. But what this does is, because of the language in this, and Rob gets into this, we actually asked him to write that report for us. And people can go onto our website at montanafamily.org and actually read it. But what this does is, the language is so deceiving that it says up to the point of viability. But then there's exceptions in there. And the exceptions are that if a quote-unquote practicing healthcare professional, not even a doctor, anybody in the entire medical industry on any level can recommend an abortion later than the point of viability. And if that happens, we could have abortion in Montana, late term abortions, we could have partial birth abortions, we could have abortions right up to the moment of birth, and it would all be legal, not just in statute, but embedded in the Constitution.
Well, and then who do they define as a healthcare provider?
That's right? Exactly right.
Is it a PA? Is it a doctor? Is it an NP? Who do they define? Is it the guy at the front desk? Well, who is it?
Right, right. And according to Professor Nadelson, we could actually have people that are not able to be licensed in other states come to Montana just because of this language that's in our Constitution that would allow them, if they can't practice abortions in other states, they could come here and be able to do it in Montana.
So it would basically turn Montana into basically like this mecca for these far left abortion mill industry folks to come here to perform late-term abortions.
Late-term abortions, especially since the surrounding states have all banned abortion. So that leaves Montana as an island, and you're right, we would act as a magnet. The other thing that's important with this is that the people, by nearly 3/4 of Montana's, 73% of the vote, said that children should have to notify their parents before getting an abortion. This would nullify that. It would ban parental involvement in a child's decision to get an abortion. And we know that 3/4 of the people in this state want that. So those people that are out there that are kind of on the fence on this, thinking, you know, I'm all about women's rights and a woman's right to choose, need to realize that this goes far, far, far beyond that. And the other thing that's funny is that people that say that they're for women's reproductive freedom or a woman's right to choose need to realize that the term woman doesn't exist anywhere in this constitutional amendment.
I definitely want to dive into that topic, because that was also, interestingly, something that came up in this recent parental notification decision out of the far-left Montana Supreme Court. I want to go back to this question of viability, because who determines viability? What is the typical – what week is viability? I know kids. I have sons, kids of friends of mine that are walking, living, thriving. They are in school right now. One of them in high school, another one either in high school or junior. And they were born very premature, and they are walking miracles. They survived. would they have been deemed viable or not viable according to this? Who decides what viability is?
It's not even a question. They would be deemed non-viable because the language in the amendment says that that viability can be determined by whether or not exceptional methods are needed to sustain the life of the child once they're born. An incubator is an exceptional method. It's that the child just can't come, be born premature and survive without any help at all. So all these preemies that are out there would be at risk of being allowed to die or being aborted, one of the two, simply because that's considered an exceptional practice and goes above and beyond what care a normal infant.
Wow.
Receives.
I just think it's worth pointing out because I know we've got listeners who, they would describe themselves as pro-life. I know we have listeners who might describe themselves as pro-choice, but even most of those who describe themselves as pro-choice believe the line should be drawn somewhere. You talked about when a baby can feel pain. That's where most feel the line should be drawn. But it just shows how radical this CI-128 initiative is. But why did they leave out any mention or reference to women or to females in this proposed initiative? Let's start there next.
Taking your calls live, 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So we've got Jeff Laslaffy joining us here in the first half of the show today, but he is going to stick around because I imagine that if we wrap up with Jeff here at 9:35, we go to that 9:35 break, we're going to get a bunch of people calling on the phone lines. You're going to want to mix it up with Jeff or have a follow-up comment. So he'll stick around for the full hour in case folks want to continue conversation. And the only reason I'm breaking it up is because we have so much election-related content that we're going to get to here over the course of the next 2 months that we still want to free up some open phones time here in there. Plus, we're going to be covering the legal analysis in more depth on Monday with Rob Nadelson as well on this very topic. So coming up at 9:40, if you got something you want to call in and talk about, give us a ring. Or if you want to jump in on the conversation right now, give us a call, 406-294-0970. And Tiffany in Kalispell, you're going to be first up. We'll get to you here in just a second. Jeff, you said there was one more point you wanted to make with regard to fetal viability with regard to this whole CI-128.
Right. So I think your listeners just need to hear the definition that's actually in the language of the amendment. It says, quote, this is a quote, fetal viability means the point in pregnancy when in the good faith judgment of a treating healthcare professional and based on the particular facts of the case, there is a significant likelihood of the fetus's sustained survival outside the uterus without the application of extraordinary medical measures. That's what it says. There's so much to unpack in there. We don't have time to do it right now. Rob will do it more on Monday. But the fact that we're talking about in the good faith judgment of a treating healthcare professional, which we said could be anybody, and then based on the particular facts of the case, oh my gosh, that's a can of worms right there. And then how do we describe the application of extraordinary medical measures? An incubator. Anything that requires a respirator, a nasal cannula, what is it? The child can't survive without any of those.
Yeah. Well, and or even somebody holding
it. A premature child.
Even somebody holding the baby, even somebody feeding, right? Very interesting. I also want to go to the broader, our friends on the left, a year or so ago, they were saying, don't change our Constitution. Don't mess with Montana's Constitution. But now they want to mess with Montana's Constitution.
It's like, are you seeing there's hypocrisy in politics?
That's not what you guys were saying a year ago. We'll talk about that more. But first, let's go into the phone lines. Tiffany in Kalispell, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, it's about how they write on the ballot. And you were talking about them using misleading information and the way they speak of it. And if you have pamphlets, medical pamphlets, they're meant to be at a grade school level to read. And I'm college educated. And when I was reading the ballot last year about the abortion, and it was specific, us moms we lost our first son shortly after birth, and we chose to give him the dignity of being birthed and hold him as long as he was here. But the way that it read last year, the last election, was that those physicians or providers could be criminally liable for that. He had trisomy 13, Jace was 6. So we knew that. So it was, I voted no because it was confusing. And I feel like it just needs to be much more straightforward so that we really know, like, are we letting, you know, moms do dignity to their child and give birth? And if they're not quote unquote viable, they're very sick. You know, it's just, it's a tough thing, but it needs to be clear so that we're not allowing things that we don't feel are okay, like late term abortion and those things of a healthy, viable baby, and just know for sure. And yeah. I mean, I know it goes so deep to try to get it to be actually what they're trying to ask.
Yeah, and so, yeah, this, so talking about the confusing, the deliberately confusing, deceptive way this one is written as well. First off, Jeff, just can't imagine the heartache that, you know, she went through and her husband went through. Oh, man.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. And that was it wasn't an amendment, it was statutory, and it was only about two sentences. This, if somebody pulls it up online and looks at it, is a half a page. There's a lot here to unpack and a lot more chances for mischief.
What about this whole argument? I mean, I don't know if we need to say much more about it, but, you know, everybody on the left, and I'd see him on Twitter X every day, don't mess with Montana's constitution, because if the legislature wanted to pass a measure that would amend the state constitution, don't mess with our constitution. But yet these same people are trying to mess with our constitution, and they're trying to mess with our elections. We had one of our callers, I thought, gave good advice, which is just reject every single one of these constitutional initiatives that are on the ballot right now. One of the things that really I think is so outrageous is, you and I talked about this during the break, if the legislature wants to amend our constitution, it requires a supermajority vote.
Supermajority two-thirds.
Supermajority two-thirds. But yet when it's on the initiative, they can change our constitution with a simple majority. That seems simply outrageous. It should require a supermajority. Otherwise, we get mob rule potentially.
Right, right. So the other thing that you brought up just before the break was the fact that the term woman exists nowhere in this amendment. And it's funny, when you start looking at the terms, they use person. They use the term pregnant person or pregnant patient. And I'm sure on Monday that Professor Nadelson's going to talk about the fact that that opens the door completely to a constitutional camels under the tent, nose under the tent, for the entire transgender agenda. So those people that are thinking of voting yes on this amendment could potentially be voting for men to be able to legally and constitutionally compete in women's sports.
And they will claim, well, because the Montana Constitution does, you know, has this non-gender specific term here, that's why now they have these it's very dangerous. And by the way, that ties in with another big problem that people have. Which, again, there are listeners to this show who consider themselves pro-choice. I think most of our listeners would identify as pro-life and do not support abortion. But even those that consider themselves pro-choice or they're one of those, well, I don't focus on the social issues type people. Well, this when we saw the parental, I think even they would agree that if a young minor child is going to get a major surgery, something major medical done, the parents should know. And yet this would throw out parental notification altogether.
Well, and that's the other thing that this does, is it creates an exemption for anyone that would take somebody to get an abortion so that they can't be criminally charged. Well, what about somebody that abuses a child, a neighbor or someone that takes your child to get an abortion? It says in here that they can't be interfered with. That's ridiculous. There's nobody in this state that thinks that's a good idea. Yet it's in here if people will just read the amendment.
And how many women are intimidated or pressured or bullied or threatened into having an abortion? You know, that's something that also never really comes up, is the coercion that takes place.
Yeah, yeah, it's a shame. So anyway,
How can, man, you mentioned the numbers.
Victoria Evis reported $8 million in out-of-state left-wing money promoting this this initiative and the others, frankly, same story there. Your side, our side, getting vastly outspent, and it's all out-of-state money. So what do our listeners do? What do everyday Montanans do to push back against this onslaught?
Well, the first thing that we do, we're a Judeo-Christian organization. First thing we do is pray. And we're just asking everybody to pray like never before. And there's prayer groups actually around across the state that are focused on this issue. And if anybody'd like to become involved in those, they can give our office a call at montanafamily.org, and we'll put them in touch. The other thing that folks can do is contribute. It takes a lot of money, especially when you're going up against $11 million and you need to run an ad campaign. It takes a lot of money to do that. They can contribute in two ways. They can contribute to the Montana Life Defense Fund, and they can, or they can contribute directly to the Montana Family Foundation. Both of those are ballot committees. And the P.O. Box is P.O. Box 485. Laurel, Montana, 59044. They can get all this information on our website at montanafamily.org.
Yeah, and then I did a story at montanatalks.com featuring the legal analysis as well, and then some of Jeff's recent radio update, legislative update as well. Back into the phone lines we go. Eric and Winifred, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for the call.
Yeah, the only comment I had there, and thank you for this discussion, but you guys keep hitting around it, but nobody just comes out and says it, that I think the third reason for this initiative, and probably the most important, is it will eliminate any legislative process or limitations on abortion. It'll be a constitutional amendment, and if anything will automatically go to the Supreme Court, the legislature and the people will no longer have anything to say about it. And I think that's the biggest reason for it.
That's a very good point, Jeff.
Eric, you're absolutely right. So in Section 36, Paragraph 2 of the amendment itself, it says that government may not burden access to abortion. That's another one that's in here. It burden in any way access to abortion. That means no regulations for the legislature. That means abortion clinics technically would not even have to abide by the clinic regulations that every other clinic in the state that doesn't do abortions has to abide by. This is just, it's a nightmare, and I'm glad that Rob's going to talk about it in detail on Monday.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, we're pushing up on our break here. Phone lines are open for anything and everything you want to talk about. If you got some other topics you want to bring up, feel free to call in. Jeff's going to stick around, because oftentimes what happens is we take this break here, which is longer than our last break, so people get a chance to refill their cup of coffee, and then, you know, after listening in on the conversation, like, wait a minute, I got something I want to talk about. So he's going to stick around in case you want to carry on the conversation about CI 128. But we will bring up some other topics as well here. 406-294-0970, or you can message us on our Montana Talks app. In fact, man, I got a bunch of messages that I need to recon here during the break. So stand by. Back after this, phone lines are open for you. You get to talk and be heard all across the great state of Montana.
This is where Montana Talks at, with Lane Nordlund.
Well, at times we felt like we were going to either float away or fly away as the rain continued to pour across central Montana for the 50th Montana Angus Tour, but that did not keep 400 participants from seeing some outstanding cattle across the Judith Basin. One of our stops was at Stevenson Angus outside of Hobson. I caught up with Daryl Stevenson, who also serves on the American Angus Association Board of Directors.
My hat's off to anybody that's actually put on one of these production. It's not easy. Preparation starts months in advance. Everybody says it's always a good excuse to clean the place up, and the fact is, we have seven regions in the state of Montana, so it does circle around once every 7 years. We're very proud of the fact that this is actually the 50th Montana Angus Tour. My grandparents were actually integral in the first Montana Angus Tour in the 1970s, and it just continually impressive on how this thing just keeps going and getting stronger and bigger every year. And the outreach of not only genetics, but the network and camaraderie that we build is now international, literally. We've got 31 states and 7 countries represented on this tour right now.
The Montana Angus Tour will conclude this afternoon at Arnson Angus Ranch in Hillinger. I'm Wayne Northland.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we got phone lines open for you right now. If you got something you want to talk about, 406-294-0970, or you can message us on our Montana Talks app. Some messages that have come in here. Tiffany in Hungry Horse. Hey, I saw the info for Tim Sheehy and Christy Nome, and I registered for tickets, wondering if you know the venue in Kalispell. Thank you in advance. Tiffany, as I understand it, I think the fact that you're registered, you'll get an email probably with all of the details, location, et cetera, once they release that. But, yeah, for those of you who haven't heard, I put a story on our Montana Talks website. South Dakota Governor Christy Nome is going to be rallying alongside Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy this weekend in Montana. I think Billings, Great Falls, and Kalispell are the three event locations coming up on Sunday. We've got the links where you can register for tickets, et cetera, on our Montana Talks website. Speaking of Great Falls, I hope to see you in Great Falls on Saturday night. I'll be along with our friends from Americans for Prosperity Montana. I've been doing these events paid for by AFP Montana all across the state, and we will be at the Fusion Fights, part of our Prosperity is Possible tour. So look forward to seeing our friends there. We got to see some great folks in Haver. We had the fights in Billings on Friday night. And then we're going to be in Missoula about 1 month from now, less than 1 month now, on the 18th at the Adams Center in Missoula. So that'll be great as well. Let's see. One thing we didn't cover here with Jeff Lasloff, and thanks Jeff for sticking around. One thing we didn't cover is we mentioned parental notification and how basically this radical CI-128 would effectively ban and prohibit parents being involved with a major decision affecting their minor children. But the far left Montana Supreme Court also ruled against parental notification, which is just crazy because there's all sorts of things that kids can't do unless they have, parental notification, parental support. But yet a major surgical procedure like this, no parental notification. But also in that very same ruling, the far left Montana Supreme Court also used no gender specific language. And it's so it raised two questions, if you ask me. One, they're trying to get the camel's nose under the tent once again. But two, are they trying to say that kids, male or female, when it comes to sexual reproduction, can do whatever they want with whoever they want? That's what that ruling kind of led you to believe. I mean, you talk about a dangerous precedent being set there.
Well, it didn't just kind of lead you to believe it. I mean, it said in the decision that kids have complete bodily autonomy. Complete bodily autonomy. What does that mean? Did a 12-year-old get to do whatever they want? I mean, do they get to get their ears pierced? These are all things that are currently illegal. Get their ears pierced, get a tattoo, go drink, go smoke. This is what bodily autonomy means.
Well, or if they want to do any of these activities with an adult, well, if it deals with their sexual reproduction, the Montana Supreme Court just said basically, oh, well, hey, they weren't even referring to women or girls when they made this decision. They specifically did not include gender. It's crazy, which also goes to the importance of these Supreme Court elections here in Montana. A lot of our listeners are supporting the Sons of Montana.
Corey Swanson and Judge Dan Wilson. The other two candidates are funded by the radical out-of-state, pro-transgender agenda, anti-women's sports groups, the abortion mill industry, and more.
Yeah, and to your point, the reason this is so important, and Rob makes that out on that point in the report as well, that in a normal state with a normal Supreme Court, they would put checks on even on this amendment, and they would interpret the language of CI 128 in a conservative fashion, especially when it comes to kids. This is going to be in front of our Montana Supreme Court, and in its current makeup, they would give the left every single thing they wanted and interpret this in the most liberal fashion possible, and it would just be a grand playground for mischief.
Yeah. Dan, invite us. Stand by. You'll be next up on the phone lines. But first, we've got Warren in Malta listening to KMMR. Warren, great to hear from you. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Aaron. Yeah, thank you for you guys, what you're doing. Lots of information, great, great information coming out of your show today and every day.
Thank you.
I just, you betcha. What, I guess a couple things that I'd like to mention is that, sometimes when I'm going down the highway, I see a speed limit sign, and if I'm in a hurry or if there's nobody around or whatever, I might speed a little bit. But that doesn't... I'm not asking for them to change the speed limit. I broke the speed limit. Why do they want us to be involved in their crime of killing a baby? If they want to kill a baby, there's lots of ways to do that. But why do I have to make it legal for them to do that?
You talk about government funding of it. I mean, Jeff, it used to be that, and Warren, thanks for the call. It used to be that even elected Democrats would vote against government funding for abortions, and that's yet another red line that's been crossed now, too.
Right. It's actually the litmus test now between the two parties.
Yeah. Very interesting. All right. Next up, let's go to Dan in Vida. Hey, Dan, what's on your mind? Thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks for having me, and you guys are doing a great job really trying to get the information out to everybody. I got a question is the big thing. So if they have this ranked choice voting, and so it's going to let the top three or four candidates through to the election in the fall. So let's say you have a couple of Democrats on the ballot and a couple of Republicans on the ballot, and whoever gets the foremost votes, well, that poor Green Party person trying to get on the ballot, or Constitutional Party, or some other tertiary party, wouldn't that ranked choice voting prevent them from even being able to field a candidate?
So does this effectively crush any other alternative parties altogether?
Exactly.
As a result, that's an interesting question. Yeah.
I would think all the Green parties and all those other parties, they would be vehemently against this, completely taking them off of any chance of getting on the ballot.
Well, speaking of the Green Party, did you see the Montana Democrat Party is still trying to boot a Green Party candidate off the ballot in the Senate race? I mean, these are the people that are constantly shrieking and shrilling, democracy, and yet they're trying to kick a Green Party candidate off the ballot. The Supreme Court rebuffed their initial efforts, but the case is still ongoing, so it still could potentially happen.
Of course.
All right, Dan, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm just questioning, would it be a coup for anybody in any tertiary party? They wouldn't be able to get off of there, get the candidate on the ballot at all.
Who knows? It certainly sounds like it would throw our primary elections into a complete circus here in Montana. Jeff, your thoughts on that?
Well, I may be wrong, but I think the Libertarians came out against both of those.
Oh, did they?
And probably for that reason.
For that similar reason that Dan and Vida brings up. That's interesting, yeah. But much like CI 128, this report that Victoria Evis did for the Helena IR points out how both CI 126 and CI 127 are getting millions and millions of dollars from far-left donors and activist groups. And here they are trying to basically. So again, we've much like CI 128, these other CIs, counterintelligence threat, millions of dollars from far left donors and activists now to mess with our elections. So don't mess with the Constitution. Don't mess with the elections this November.
Well, and we've seen this in other states. We saw it happen in Colorado. We saw it happen in Minnesota, where you had states that were strongly red because of a series of events and big dollar donors from out of state coming and changing things. Those states are now solidly blue. So it's something to be concerned about.
Let's see. News on the U.S. Senate race here in Montana, because as Jeff pointed out, really the reason this thing is on the ballot this November is twofold. They're trying to drive out, to get out the vote for the far left base. So that's why they have it out there, because they're trying to defend far left Senator John Tester. Speaking of Senator Tester, Laura Loomer. Laura Loomer's crew confronted John Tester in the Capitol. You know, John Tester has been avoiding the public. He's been dodging any tough questions whatsoever. I'll play the audio from Laura Loomer's crew confronting John Tester about his violent rhetoric against President Trump, especially after this second assassination attempt against President Trump. Will he apologize to President Trump for his own violent rhetoric? Non-answer next.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Friend.
Yeah, if you guys remember when we had Laura Loomer on this show, Laura Loomer's crew, Loomer Unleashed, they confronted Montana Democrat Senator John Tester. They asked him if he'd like to apologize for inciting violence against President Trump. When Tester said, quote, "You need to punch President Trump in the face." And so they asked, they tried to ask John Tester if he would apologize. John Tester had a few staff hovering around him, physically interfering with this question even being asked, as he quickly runs away from the camera.
And one of the things that I heard.
Wait, hold on. That's the Springfield city manager admitting that they've had problems with domestic animals. Hold that clip for just a second, you filthy animals. We'll get to that one in just a second here. Where did I have the Tester? Here we go. Tester asked to apologize. Here's the soundbite.
How's it going, Senator Tester? Will you apologize for your violent rhetoric against President Trump after you said Trump needed to be punched in the face to prevent from winning?
I'm not preventing him from walking.
No, I understand, but we've got a gun.
We've got an assassination attempt against President Trump. Senator Tester, will you apologize for saying Trump needed to be punched in the face? Why is your staff blocking me from asking a legitimate question?
It's going to be the best way to get in touch with us. I understand that, but we've got to get to a hearing.
The lengths at which John Tester will go to refuse to answer any questions whatsoever. You know, people wonder why was John Tester not at the St. Paddy's Day parade? Why was he not at the Miles City Bucking Horse Sale parade? Because he doesn't want to face any tough questions. And I think he knows how angry, truly angry, Montana voters are, including some of the people that actually voted for him maybe a time or two in past elections. But that's my thoughts. That's based off of what I'm hearing as I'm traveling across the state of Montana. Let's get to another caller on the phone lines. John in Kalispell, listening to KJJR. John, what's on your mind?
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, I have a question. What do you think the unanticipated consequences of an electorate that doesn't understand the verbiage in most of these citizens' initiatives or constitutional amendments that occur, and how can the courts go ahead and reinterpret what those initiatives or amendments may be, but yet why do we actually have the citizens that do not understand the ability to read the language or how those unintended consequences are actually vote on these things within such a short time period without any study or full discussions on it?
And the only thing we get are millions of dollars in propaganda commercials from out-of-state special interests. Great question, Ian. I recognize the voice. You served with him when you were in the legislature.
Yes. So, you know, I'm not... I'm not sure why. I'm not sure why people are given a short time to talk about this. I do think that the debate in the legislature is probably more substantive than making these types of decisions as sound bites. But I think it's incumbent upon the people. If, you know, the people gave themselves in the Constitution the initiative process, and if we're going to do that, then I think it's incumbent upon the electorate that wanted that process in place to take the time to read these things and not just, especially in the case of CI 128, not just read the ballot statement. Because the ballot statement was written by the Montana Supreme Court, rewritten after the Attorney General wrote a ballot statement. So the Supreme Court was flying cover for the CI 128 initiative, guys. You actually need to go and read the actual language of the initiative itself, the language that's going to be in the Constitution.
And didn't Montana voters say we want parental notification in a...
almost three-quarters...
And yet the Supreme Court can say, nah, we don't want to let the people of Montana decide that one.
Seven judges overruled three-quarters of the people of the state of Montana.
Good night. Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's such a mockery of justice, what we've seen with these far-left activists. So the clip I wanted to play, they're eating the dogs. They're eating the cats. Have you guys seen or heard the funny videos, President Trump? Anyway, from the debate, remember when the ABC fake news moderator... We've spoken with the Springfield, Ohio city manager. There are no reports of migrants eating domesticated animals. Wait a minute. Here's that very same Springfield city manager. Elon Musk shared this via X and referred to the ABC Always Be Cheating News.
And one of the things that I heard that bothered me very much, I've actually had quite a few people contact me here lately, is some pretty horrid things occurring to domesticated animals in the neighborhood. We've had some stuff in the park that they're being taken advantage of for reasons other than, and if
anyway, there you go. It's on tape. Go to x.com/Aaron Flint. You can find that one. We're so short on time now. Jeff, random close to the show here. You've been to Israel. I've been to Israel. We stand with our friends in Israel. What a remarkable, brilliant operation where they took out these Hezbollah terrorists with the exploding pagers.
Don't mess with the Israelis. When will they learn?
Yeah, don't mess with God's people. You got one more thing. Yeah,
well, I just wanted to say, if people want to be involved in CI 128, they can pray and they can contribute at montanafamily.org.
Well, thanks again for sticking around for the rest of the hour. I figured we'd get more calls on that topic. But what I was going to say, did you see Bibi Netanyahu? Somebody came up to him and they said, are you James Bond? Listen to the reaction.
And now, I guess I'm a screamer called James Bond.
I think I'm James Bond. Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu.
Isn't that great? No, I'm not James Bond. Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu. That's right. Don't mess with Israel.
Right.
All right, Jeff, good to see you.
Thanks,
I had to sneak that one in there before we wrapped up the hour. What do we got coming up tomorrow? Susie Hedlund.